Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
Well, the planet Venus seems to think so. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and myself and Will answered the call. Each week we'll be joined by guests to discuss movies, television, popular culture, and anything else we fucking feel like talking about. How you doing, Will?
Let me tell you what. Two episodes ago, we had Brian Swanson of Fox Swan, karaoke comedy duo, and we told you that they were putting on this prom.
Oh, I know all about this fucking prom.
And the prom is becoming the bane of my existence. Because the prom is, the day this podcast goes up is the day of the prom. I don't have a date yet to this prom. I had a date to my actual prom. Now, years later, don't have a date.
To your adult prom as a person in his 30-something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my mother has noticed this and is not very happy about this, is the prom. I told my mom I was going to the prom for grown-ups, and she was less concerned about the fact that I might be in some state of arrested development and more concerned with the fact I don't have a date. And she told me it was really sad that I didn't have a date.
You know, what's interesting is that I'm taking your mom to the prom. She's my date.
You son of a bitch.
I told her I'd pay for her ticket, and she said yes, and, you know, what else can I do? It's just, it's the way of the world.
What's your mom doing that night?
What is my mother doing that night? Nothing. Probably watching something on Netflix asleep at 9:30.
I'm going to be giving her a call.
Hey, mother's too good for you.
What's going on? What's going
well,
on?
Well, I took my fucking tuxedo shirt to the cleaners today, and I will have to make a stop at a tuxedo shop this week to figure out how to tie a bow tie.
I actually meant, you know, housekeeping in the ad. But...
Oh, no, we're still talking about this prom also. I have become the official Xanax dispenser of the Fox One prom, so it should be a fun night if you're available. Saturday night, Moose Lodge in Burbank. Come along. Housekeeping. Usual stuff, Facebook, Twitter, join us, like us, follow us. We currently have 146 Facebook friends. Our goal is...
Or likes.
Likes, I'm sorry, they're not our friends.
Friends
would indicate a two-way relationship, a give and take. This is just a like. It's a passive form of admiration. So we're trying to get to 150. That means four more people. Make it happen. Four more people. We can do this. If we don't, it'd be a sad state of affairs. But, yeah, same usual stuff. The Twitter, the Facebook.
I also want to, in the housekeeping here, give a little shout-out to last week's guest, Barry Warnick, when we discussed about... who the gay superhero would be. He called it with the Green Lantern. He knew. And there you go.
There you go. The Green Lantern is gay, although it is the Green Lantern in the Earth 2 world, not Earth 1. So
Nevertheless. Barry Warnick knew. How did he know? Who's our sponsor this week?
Today's episode is brought to you by Greece. Greece, that jewel of the Mediterranean, the cradle of philosophy, the birthplace of democracy, and now the scourge of Europe. Please, come visit us. We're begging you. We really need your money. For a limited time only, receive a jar of olives and 6 dolmas free with every plane ticket purchased. Greece, we gave you the word democracy and the word chaos.
This is, things are fine in Europe. Everything's
fine.
No,
it's a fucking nightmare in Europe. And fuck you, Greece. You did a few good things for about 100 years, and now we're all suffering the effects of it. We're all enthralled to your, misguided ideas.
So Greece is the enemy of the podcast. No.
No, it isn't, but they're just fiscal.
They're a sponsor. We got to be nice.
If you want to go into a 10-minute discussion here on international economics, but I don't think the listeners want that.
Instead, we're going to talk about, on this episode, we're going to talk about a few things. We're going to talk about the return of True Blood to television. We're going to talk about the fine film Snow White.
Fuck that movie.
And we're going to talk about an epidemic that's occurring here in North America that I'm a little concerned about, and we'll get to that. But we also have a terrific guest with us today.
All our guests are terrific.
This one's particularly terrific. She's an actress, and she is also she records audiobooks, which is very interesting, and I want to discuss that, including the 50 Shades of Grey series, and it's Becca Battelle.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Guys. Thanks for having me.
Don't look so shocked.
I'm happy to be here.
You forgot you were here.
Yeah,
for a little while.
I was engrossed in your conversation and banter.
Really?
About Greece.
About Greece.
You don't have to lie to us just because you're looking at us. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming out on this Tuesday. Is it Tuesday? What day is it?
It's a Tuesday.
Excellent. Welcome on this Tuesday night.
Thanks.
So let's start at the beginning. Let's start with your origin story.
Oh, boy.
You're not from L.A.
No, I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. I moved here almost 10 years ago. I was a dancer most of my life, a ballet dancer.
Oh,
I went
really?
To high school performing arts for dance, for ballet. I'll skip over the boring parts. I ended up going to college for music theater and then moved to L.A. after college. And
as you do.
Here
did,
I am.
Well, did you know anyone or did you just like get on a plane
and
come to L.A.?
I had a friend who lived here, one friend out here, and I moved in with her for a couple of months before I got my own place. But right. I basically loaded up. I had no money saved up. I loaded up a truck, hitched my Focus to the back of it. I had a Focus at the time. And drove across country with my sister. I actually overextended my bank account by like $500 just moving out here. So glad I had a place
to stay.
Solid
financial planning.
Yeah, it was really, really planned very well. But, you know, I've been very lucky. I've gotten jobs and I've somehow stayed here for 10 years. So.
Did you kind of then immediately... I mean, was it a struggle, or did you immediately kind of start finding
I was lucky because the girl I moved in with, you know, she had been here for a couple of years. Her mom had moved out here with her, so they had some connections. I got a job as a receptionist at a hair salon that was paying cash, you know.
That works.
Yeah, so that was my first job, and then I got a job at a restaurant. And my first, like, 2 years were just getting myself on my feet. And then, actually, the end of December of the following year was when I booked Rolling Cats, the musical.
Oh.
It was up. It was playing in Sonora, California, so I left L.A.
Sonora.
For, yeah, there's nothing there. But it was an Equity House. It was like one of the first regional theater productions ever. We had all the same choreography and costumes and everything that the Broadway production had.
It's like being in Manhattan, only in Sonora.
Right.
I had a professor in college who was a... quick sidebar. He came out of the closet in his late 30s. He had been raised Catholic and was very, very gay and been married for about 15 years. And he described, how do you know you live in the boonies? Because you have to see the road show of every Broadway production. So I'm like, basically your definition means you're not living in Manhattan. That's how you know you live
in
a small town.
Yeah, that's the only place. Then.
Yeah. And he wrote a whole book on how, sorry, D.A. Miller, he was kind of a mentor of mine. He's a fantastic professor. He said that the rite of passage for every gay boy is being in their parents' basement and listening to the Gypsy record over and over again. So
that's
I'll
awesome.
Take his word on that, but that was how he described it.
That's really funny.
So you mentioned theater.
Yes.
And I, do you still do a lot of theater? Because I saw you a few years ago in a fantastic, hysterical musical, Head the Musical.
Yeah.
Which was, it was kind of a... like 50s, had a 50s sci-fi thing to it, but it was also very sexual. It was very,
yeah,
it was really
it
funny.
It was campy, it was raunchy, it was ridiculous, it was so fun. It was based on the 1962 B horror film called The Brain That Wouldn't Die.
It's a good movie.
Mystery Science Theater does a, they have an episode where they, you know, make fun of it. So it's a pretty funny movie. But the musical was really fun. I got to play this character that's a nymphomaniac, and I got to sing a song about how much I like to fuck. And, you know, I was dancing on a stripper pole while I was singing.
I cry that at night. It's not so much a song as it is a lament.
It was pretty fun. It was.
It played for a while.
We were supposed to run for 6 weeks, and we ran for 6 months.
I heard that they're going to be opening the first authorized production, Sonora, this year. Of Head the Musical.
Yeah, no, it's true.
But is anything more happening with that? Because it seemed like a kind of thing that would make a good, like, film, or it was really funny.
Yeah, there's definitely talks of the film in the works. They were holding auditions, actually, at the beginning of the year, but then production got pushed, and it's quote-unquote happening, so we'll see.
If it does happen, let me tell you, in this play there was a scene that I still think about and laugh in one song, because there's a disembodied head on a table for most of this play. And in one of the songs that the head sings, she has this line where I think she says something like, I'm a head on this, just a head on this fucking table. And I still think about that and laugh my ass off.
Yeah, she goes, I'm a fucking head on a table. It's hilarious.
It's really good.
It is
So are
really
you doing
funny.
any more theater stuff? Is there any more?
Well, I don't
It's
think
very
I've
musical.
done anything since Head as far as theater goes.
How about film-wise,
No,
as an
I've
actress?
done a couple of films, short films. I did an independent feature that just was released at the end of last year called Walk a Mile in My Pradas. It had Tom Arnold and Dee Wallace and Mike Starr,
Huh.
a couple other semi-name actors. And then I had one little scene that was very wonderful and awesome and very
They made you
important.
eat something terrible, didn't they?
It's the linchpin of the movie, is
It's like that. It's like the
Yes.
scene in Network with his wife.
Beatrice Straight, and she won an Oscar.
She did. She
She's in
submitted the
6 minutes of screen time. She won
linchpin
an
of the
Oscar.
movie. So, by the way, Tom Arnold went from being in a James Cameron movie to independent films.
Yeah.
Tom Arnold's. He's lucky his career didn't end with Roseanne. Let's just put it that way.
Got it.
He's Tom Arnold's doing all
He's
right.
cool. He's a
Let's talk
cool
about the big
guy.
thing that you currently are working on.
Yeah,
Yes,
that's what most of my time has been taken up with is the
now you
audiobooks.
do audiobooks. How did you get into doing audiobooks?
Actually, my ex had gotten called in by Random House Audio to do a general audition. He got it off of Actors Access or something,
Okay.
and he got cast to do five books this series. And I was working at their studios in Woodland Hills. I was working in Woodland Hills at the time. I just stopped by after work one day to say, "Hey, what's up?" Met his director. I gave her my headshot, and she's like, "Oh, have you ever done voiceover?" I'm like, "No, but I like to." And and then a couple weeks later, they called me in for a general. About a month or two after that, I got a book. I generally do kids' books, so I got my first young adult novel, and then a bunch of time went by. I'd say 7 months,
Yeah.
8 months went by. Then I got another one, and then another few months went by, and I got. And then, and then the next year I got like three, and then last year I did seven,
Wow.
and this year so far I've done five. And last year I actually got to do a Judy Blume novel,
Nice.
which was really cool because she
That's kind of
chose me
exciting.
herself, and that's
Oh, she
really.
chose you? Oh,
She's
that's
still alive?
fantastic.
I thought
Oh
she.
yeah, no, she's
No,
alive and
I
well.
thought
She's
like Judy
Florida.
Blume died, and now there's just a collective of hack writers who turn out Judy Blume trademark novels.
No,
That's what
she's.
happened to Hardy Boys when Franklin W. Dixon died. They
Well,
just had a workshop that just went and kept pumping out Hardy Boys novels.
that's the Hardy Boys, and you're the only one who even knows who wrote the Hardy Boys books, apparently.
I read Hardy Boys 1 through 100, thank you very much, and
That's
Hardy Boys
awesome.
Case Files, which are a little bit darker and a little bit more adult.
But Judy Blume, yeah, she handpicked. That's a thrill.
Yeah, that was
She's
awesome.
kind of
Fantastic.
awesome.
And then I also won an award last year for one of my books. It was a Audiophile magazine earphones award. Earphones award.
Awesome.
So that was cool. And then
We have an
award winner.
award-winning talker on
Is
our
it, is it,
show.
you're better than this
Your voice, by the
podcast.
way, is gonna put us to shame. Your dulcet tones and
I
mellifluous.
highly doubt that. I highly
Wow.
doubt that.
Before we get to the big thing, the big book that you've been working on, which I've already said in your intro, but so you just got you walked in, and what did the director like your voice? That's why she brought you in? Was
She.
it just this one meeting that you just
No, yeah, it was
chance
just.
encounter?
I just came in to say hi to my boyfriend at the time, and she was directing him. She's one of the producers there now,
You hear these stories all the time. Like, it's always, I went with my friend to an audition and I ended up getting cast in Harry Potter.
Apparently,
Yeah, you got.
advice to actors out there: never audition. Just go to your friend's audition
Your
because you'll
less
clearly
attractive
be.
friend's audition, and
Well,
you will
he
book the
was
part.
already, he w had already booked it, and.
You know, it's funny because now people listen to my voice, this disembodied voice in this thing, and I think I have an interesting voice. I don't know if I could read a book, but I feel I could do something
You could
with
be
this
a
voice.
cartoon
As a
character.
voice
I
professional, what do you think of my voice?
like your voice. It carries very nicely. It sounds almost theatrical.
Almost.
You've got,
I gotta
well,
hone
you've
it.
got that New York
Yeah.
thing going for you too. So I could definitely see you as like a radio personality.
Boom.
Boom.
Not me. I'm just a flat monotone of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're the linchpin of the show. You're
Yes,
holding it
I'm the
together.
comm center.
So you're doing Judy Blume books.
So I'm doing Judy Blume.
And now, though, then suddenly...
And then I get a phone call.
The exact opposite of Judy Blume books.
Yeah, no, my executive producer calls me. He's like, hey, I have a project for you.
Do you know about
it's
sex?
It's a little bit different than what you're used to doing. It's actually erotica. And I'm like, eek. But then he follows up by saying, but it's supposed to be the next Twilight series. And I'm like, oh. In that case.
I could do vampire porn.
So I did some mulling it over. I called my mother. I always call my mom whenever I have anything big to decide on in my life and talk to her about it. And
what's she doing for prom? Can I bring your mom?
she's a lesbian. I don't know if she'd go with you. But,
well, it'd be better than some of the dates Will's had in the past.
And she's in Kentucky, so. But I bet she would go with you. She's cool. She's awesome. I would bring her if she was here. What was I talking about?
You called your mom.
I called my mom.
This is a big decision.
That's right.
You're going to do this new book.
And she said, do it. She's like, that sounds like a really awesome opportunity. You know, obviously she's very liberal. She came to see me in Head, the musical. You know, she's pretty much seen and heard me do a lot of things on stage as an actor. So, you know, she kind of talked me into it. I basically had already said yes to Random House, but I just kind of wanted to get an okay from her.
Had you heard of this series at
no.
that time at all? I mean, was it starting?
Had it been published yet?
It was published online as an ebook originally.
Is my ebook not taking off like this?
So it had a huge following, a huge, massive following before it came out. So, but I got the phone call like, you know, 2 days before we started recording, which is kind of unheard of. And then...
Now, had the author heard your previous...
The way it was explained to me was that Random House picked up the books, so they were doing the audiobooks. I think they were kind of going back and forth on whether they wanted to do an audiobook or not, but they decided to do it. They sent over a selection of their voices. They have thousands of voices. They sent over a selection to E.L. James and her people, and E.L. James selected me to be the voice of 50 Shades.
And why do you think that is?
I don't know.
You have a phenomenal voice.
I don't know, because I sound very innocent and young, and the character, the main character it's written in the first person is Anastasia, and she's 21. She's a virgin. She's only ever been kissed twice.
What's wrong with being a 21-year-old virgin?
I'm just saying. She's a college, she's about to graduate from college. She's a British literature major. She's very smart, but she's very inexperienced when it comes to guys and, like, the real world.
And she picks the wrong guy.
And she picks... Well, it ends up being the right guy in the end, but...
Spoiler alert.
Like anyone wouldn't have known. But, so I don't know. Maybe something resonated for her in my voice when she heard it.
In the book, she meets this guy. What's his...
Christian Grey
of the 50 Shades.
I swear I haven't read it.
And here's the thing.
Of the butt drawer.
I haven't read the book. I will listen to the book.
Yeah, you have to listen to it. You have to listen.
In a dark room with
the
light.
You know, honestly, I really think that every man should read or listen to this series of books.
Because it has this reputation of it being just like a woman thing, and it's like a hot book that like women are like reading at night.
I think that guys this day and age could learn a thing or two from listening to the books.
Well, now it gets into like a whole BDSM thing, right? That's what Christian Grey
is
into.
Yeah, well, that's I'm afraid to say too much about the book because I don't want to give too much
away.
The plot
is out there. It's well known.
Yeah, it's BDSM. When you first are introduced to him towards the beginning of the book, it comes out that he's, you know, a dominant. And so, and the story goes, you know, he's looking for a new submissive, and that's
where they're related.
No, it's a tale as old as time. That was actually the if you read the original version of Beauty and the Beast. That Disney cleaned it up a lot.
Honestly, the Beauty and the Beast
It has been compared to Beauty and the Beast.
From what you're telling me, and I think that having not read the books, but based on what I know, conversations, I have a good friend who is obsessed with them, even as she is ashamed of her own love for the books, and she's a very intelligent, educated person. It's not Andrea Marchand, someone else. Not that Andrea Marchand is not talented and educated, but still. But yeah, it taps into something primal.
It really does.
Universal.
And, I mean, to be perfectly honest, you know, it's not the most highbrow literature anyone's going to read.
Yeah.
You know, you can read reviews online, and a lot of the things that are said is it's highly repetitive, she uses the same language over and over again, like, all that stuff is true. You know, it's not great literature, but it's, like you said, it taps into something very...
Look at the Twilight books. You know, yeah. It's not great literature. My sister, now is 18, when she was 15, 16, reading the Twilight books. Go, are these books any good? She goes, no. I'm like, why are you reading them? She goes, because I'm a 15-year-old girl.
And it's entertaining. I mean, the great thing about it, you know, I dread when I get that book that, like, I just can't pay attention to, that I'm prepping, and then all of a sudden I'm on Facebook, you know, and then I'm like, shit, I need to be prepping. And, you know, this book... I had a crazy short deadline, and I didn't find myself wandering away from it.
I kept turning
the pages. And one thing I can really say for E.L. James is she really knows how to write a cliffhanger. Like, the end of the first book and the end of the second book, they kind of force you to read the next book.
We'll take a step back. The quick question, though. Going back to the process of recording audiobook.
Yes. Okay.
How many pages do you read in a day? When you're on a usual non-rush production schedule.
In a young adult novel, the font is larger, so I'll probably do somewhere between 90 and 100 pages. I'd say a regular fiction adult novel, not adult novel, but...
Yeah,
a novel for adults.
A fiction novel. You usually do like 60 to 80 pages a day.
Wow. And how many takes do you try to get it all out in one take, or...?
Well, the process is a little bit different for recording audiobooks because you have the entire manuscript in front of you. So you just read it as if you're reading a book, and then once you get to, you know, if you mess up a line, then you just stop and you go back to the beginning of the sentence and you start over again. So, depending on which company you're working with, like the company I'm working with now, they kind of edit as you go. So whenever I mess up on this book that I'm currently working on today, this week, I have to wait. Like if I fuck up, I have to wait for him to reset the Pro Tools, and then he'll play a little bit before, and then I continue.
But the expectation is that you've pre-read it, you sort of thought about your creative choices in terms of intonation and pacing?
Oh, for sure. I mean, for me... and going back just... Oh, whatever. I don't need to go back. But for myself, I generally like to read the entire manuscript once, just as an audience member.
Right.
Just to read it. I mean, of course, I'm an actor, so I'm constantly thinking about things. The first time through, it's kind of impossible not to, but I try to just read it and enjoy it. And then the second time, I go through and I read it and I break down all the characters and I create a character list, either in a notebook or on an Excel file, and I make a list of every character, how they're related to whoever's telling the story. Who they, like, the easiest way for me to differentiate characters is to put a face to each character. So whether it's Will kind of represents Jeremy in this one, and Sean kind of represents so-and-so. Or I can take, like, a celebrity. Like, okay, this guy's kind of like Brad Pitt, or maybe this girl's kind of like Mary Catherine Gallagher, or whatever. Like, I can use characters or people or... Whatever, it's helpful for me. I'm sorry, I keep knocking this. It's helpful for me to put a face on them. So then I go through and I do that, and I research anything I don't know. Like, for example, this book I'm reading right now, I had to do a sound effect for a swan.
What did you do? What did you do?
Oh, I'm not going to do it. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Would they make you do the sound effect? Well, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, you have to do everything in an audio.
If something squawks, you got to go squawk.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, and even male characters, you mail it out?
You do everything. There's some audiobooks are recorded with multiple readers to do multiple characters, but most audiobooks are one person, and it's usually written from one person's point of view, which is easy when you're reading from first person, because
it's
that
person's
version of everybody.
Is it mostly then actors who always do this, or is it just could you just have a good voice?
Are you still angling for a job?
Well, no, because it sounds like. There's a lot of, like, you would break down a character that you're doing.
It's performance.
It is a performance. So then I was wondering if they just, like...
I'm pretty sure. I mean, most of the audiobook readers that I've met in the studio and that I know, they're actors also.
Yeah.
And when I first read my first book, going way back to 3 years ago or whatever it was, I remember my director saying, hey, do you have a theatrical background? And I was like, yeah, actually I do. She's like, yeah, well, I find that readers come in that have a theatrical background, as in theater, they do very well at audiobooks.
Yeah, it's live performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to 50 Shades, and there's this whole BDSM thing, and we had a dominatrix on an episode 8 of the podcast, who also has a webcomic about being a dominatrix.
Hey, Nick.
Her name's,
wow.
Yeah, nickbuxom.com. And so, you know, it's like, it's funny, when we had her on, it's like, oh, wow, like, this is kind of fringe, like on the fringe of society kind of thing, yet this is so firmly in the zeitgeist, this thing that is about BDSM and stuff like that. I mean, SNL spoofs it. The president was asked about it on The View. He was asked if, like, Michelle had read it or something like that.
Why does Sasha Malia haven't read it? I don't want any of that.
Yeah, Ellen did a skit about the
Ellen did
audio,
a reading from it.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was hysterical. Ryan Seacrest was playing it for like 3 weeks.
I could see Ryan Seacrest being a sub.
He was playing the audiobook live on air for a couple weeks, and Gilbert Godfrey just did a thing.
That is, really? If you get a chance, listen to Gilbert Godfrey reading from 50 Shades of Grey. It's phenomenal.
It's pretty creepy.
You say creepy, I say phenomenal.
What's like the craziest, like, what's one, before we move on to the topics of the week, what was like one of the craziest lines or scenes in the, like, is there something you could tell us, something that enticed the people to give this a listen, listen to your voice reading this thing?
There's a lot of very gratuitous sex scenes. It's kind of hard to pick just one.
Your favorite.
But, you know, there's a scene, there's quite a long scene where they're in the Red Room of Pain, and he's using a riding crop on her.
Oh, we know.
So, that scene's pretty, you know, interesting, I guess.
I've been to that Red Room of Pain.
It's a club down on Larchmont, Red Room of Pain. They make a good old fashioned there.
All right. Well, honestly, this is really fascinating stuff to me.
You know what's gonna happen? We gotta move on, and then we're gonna get comments from our listeners. You should have kept talking about it. I wanted to hear more, but.
But let me tell you what. All you listeners who say we should keep talking, if this podcast ran 90 minutes, you would be complaining that you had to listen to us for 90 minutes.
So fuck you.
So yes, go fuck yourselves. But this is great, and obviously, listen.
Don't read. Reading is old school. You don't want to read anymore.
Well, if you live in LA, what better thing is there to do than sit in traffic and listen to an
after you listen to the Wilshawn podcast.
Listen to the Wilshawn podcast, and then
you listen to the book.
Available on Audible, iTunes, Amazon, anywhere shit is sold.
And we'll have you do this.
And it's available on CD, also on booksontape.com.
What's CD?
And we'll have you do this at the end of the show, too. But if people want to learn more about you, where can they go?
They can go to www.beccabateau.com. Should I spell that?
We can spell it later.
Becca, B-E-C-C-A, Bateau, B-A-T-T-O-E.com.
Sounds very Creole.
It's French.
Speaking of that region.
Speaking of Louisiana.
Louisiana. True Blood comes back TV. One HBO show ends, Game of Thrones, and of course another big one starts. Season 5 of True Blood. Do you watch True Blood?
Oh, gosh, I'm so upset because I had cable for the longest time, and then last year I saw all but, I think, the very last episode of season 4. So
you don't know what happened.
So I don't know what happened.
So I can't.
So I feel like I should be like holding my ears.
I have seen the pilot
talking.
Of True Blood, and that is all.
Really?
You've never watched beyond that?
I didn't like it. It just seemed.
Although, sorry.
Oh, what were you gonna say?
I was just. I've read all the books that they're based on.
So you're kind of. You're a Snooki.
So I actually
Stillwell,
know more than you guys probably.
Snooki Stackhouse.
Not Snooki Snowell.
No.
Okay.
You know what? Here's the thing about the series, and it's kind of similar to what we were saying about 50 Shades of Grey. It's, although I would argue season 2 of True Blood was fantastic.
Well, season 2. Come
overall. It's just, it knows what it is. It's this unabashed thing about blood and sex, and it's just a really good time.
I want blood and sex. I don't need to go to television. That's my life. here's my problem with True Blood. I watched a pilot episode. I'm going to say something now. Please don't judge me for it. But the creator, Alan Ball, who also created,
6 Feet Under.
Six Feet Under, and also was the writer of American Beauty, is, very prominent in the gay community.
Yes.
And I felt like watching the pilot, remove the word vampire, replace it with the word gay,
yes.
And that's your show. And it was too on the surface.
To a point, you're right, but I think that's a fun way of dealing with that issue. And the pilot is heavy with that, but the series as a whole doesn't necessarily...
The only time I watch episodes is when I find out there's some Anna Paquin nudity in an episode.
And it wasn't created by him. It was actually created by
the adaptation, yeah. The vision of the show.
Yeah, that's true. The story was already there.
No, the story was there, but what they chose to emphasize and draw out, I just felt like I was
watching. The books are very different from the show, so.
I just didn't take to it. It wasn't my type of thing.
You know what? I think the pilot was
The accents drove me nuts.
The pilot was a little shaky, but honestly, it got good fast.
And there's a reason why a couple of the accents are worse than others, and it's explained later in season one.
That's true.
But you know what, though? I don't take to any argument that says, well, you had to keep watching and then you would understand. The job of a pilot, the job of the first three episodes.
You're wrong on this. It's a fun show.
I'm not doubting its funness. I'm just saying I didn't take to
it. And you want to know what? You mentioned Anna Paquin nudity. And you also mentioned Alan Ball as being big in the gay community. But let me tell you what. He knows how to cast beautiful women. Some of the women on this show, be all about.
That's what God invented the internet, so I can just cut to the good parts.
Okay, fair enough. Well, then moving on. Speaking of... I have no transition here. Me and Sean went to go see... Snow White this weekend, because I had to review it for my radio gig, and have you seen this movie?
I have not seen the movie, but I have read reviews.
And you're about to hear some more. Sean, what did you think of Snow White?
I think you should take a piece of broken glass, cut your eyes out before seeing this movie. It's the worst.
It is a nightmare.
Don't hold yourself back.
He is holding himself back. It was a nightmare. We're watching the movie, and we're sitting there. And, you know, we never know what the other person's thinking when you're watching a movie, because you're just sitting there quietly in the theater. And it's getting to this big scene where Snow White's storming a castle after giving the worst rousing speech in movie history.
It's like the St. Crispin's Day speech from Henry V, only done by the worst.
Kristen Stewart.
Yeah.
Yes. And the St. Kristen Stewart Day speech.
And Sean then, as she storms the castle, Sean just goes, "Fuck you." And then I'm like, okay, we're on the same page on this movie. It was just, it was boring. It was like, I aggressively hated this movie. And I aggressively hated Kristen Stewart because she was just so bland. She has got to be the blandest actress in the history of cinema.
Couple thoughts. If a movie gets an F, that means it's just an unabashed failure. Just nothing worked. This movie is not an F. This movie's worse. It's a D-, which is the saddest grade you can receive. Because the costumes, like Colleen Atwood, who is a multi-time Academy Award, brilliant costume designer, costumes are amazing. I will give it that. And it has flashes of visual interest, but the movie, it's boring. It's dull. It's humorless. Everyone just sleepwalks away through. I think Kristen Stewart must have, if you added it up, maybe 3 pages of dialogue. And she just walks around with her mouth agape like a fucking fish.
She has
looking
the same
around.
Expression for everything.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's kind of like that in those Twilight movies, too. She just is no... And it's funny because...
Here's another movie where I'm led to believe that not one, but two beautiful males are madly in love with this girl and are torn in this... love triangle for this.
For why are they so crazy about her? She has no personality. Vampires, werewolves, huntsmen, dukes, everybody wants Kristen Stewart. No. And let me tell you what. In a movie where you got Kristen Stewart and Charlize Theron, we're not supposed to think that Charlize Theron is the fairest of them all. Come on. Come on.
And this movie has sudden and awkward tone shifts. The bad guys show up whenever it's convenient for the plot. It's a storytelling nightmare. And it's 2 hours and 7 minutes long.
And I was thinking about those...
At least it's not 3 hours.
I was thinking about those 7 minutes while I'm watching this, knowing that it's going to be 7 minutes longer than you kind of think a movie might be.
Had this movie been 90 minutes, had they really...
No, it still would have been awful.
But it would have been a short awful. Maybe they could have salvaged something.
Look, honestly, we could yell about this for the remainder of the podcast. We're not going to because you haven't seen the film. And quite frankly, just don't see it. Just put the people out there.
I read the NPR article and they bashed it the same way as well. And they're usually pretty kind to movies.
Fucking liberals.
I aggressively... I aggressively hated this movie.
Well, you said that if today we were to do our worst of the decade list, not worst of the year, people, worst of the decade. Mind you, it's only 2012.
Yeah, we're only 2.5 years into the decade. But it would be my worst film of the decade, and we're going to keep track of this. And when we're doing the Will Schoen podcast 7.5 years from now, we'll see where it is.
How about of the millennium?
Ooh, no, we got to do the century. Yeah. Millennium films haven't been around that. We should do our list of that.
That's what I meant, the century.
Oh, but that just comes out, that just becomes a best of all time.
You know what? Just don't see this movie. We hate it so
much.
Save
your 6 to 12.50.
And you know what? I talked about Battleship on the show a few weeks ago. Battleship is Shakespeare compared to this movie. I hate it. Let's just move on. You know, speaking of people who I actually thought were bland actors, super quick, I always thought this of Channing Tatum. I always thought that he was. But then 21 Jump Street, he was fantastic in. And I heard this new G.I. Joe movie got pushed back. Originally, they said it was to turn it into 3D. But now they're saying it's because they need to add more Channing Tatum. More C-tates to the film, because apparently, spoiler alert, I guess he gets killed early on in this film.
And they realize, wow, that was an ill-advised creative decision, because now he's a star. And he's got Magic Mike coming out in a few weeks.
Do you like the C-tates? As a woman, do you like the C-tates?
You know, sadly, I have not seen anything he's done.
Okay, you and I, we got to watch the original Step Up.
Okay.
Sean is a big... You might not know this, and having dance background, Sean is a big fan of the Step Up
movies. I was thinking about this,
nice.
By the way. We can discuss this a little later, but my birthday weekend, Straddle, is July 22nd. Buy me presents. And that weekend, Step Up Revolutions come out.
Uh-oh.
And I'm thinking, instead of the traditional St. Nick's party, I'm just going
to
tell
You're
everyone...
You're
going
to force us all to go see...
I'm going to force 40 of my closest friends... to go see Step Up Revolution. I think it's what we may have to do.
That's hilarious.
Well, that might be what we do then.
We can bring booze into the theater. You're coming to my party. We'll see Step Up.
All right.
We'll talk about this later.
Okay.
Right, were you...
The only thing that I was going to comment about was just the... And this is off the subject of Channing Tatum, but you were talking about it being 3D, and I realized after seeing The Avengers... And I realized this before, but I really confirmed for myself after seeing The Avengers in 3D that I hate watching 3D films when they're live action. I can't take it. It's
animation
too,
is different.
Especially if they're not shot in 3D. If they're made 3D in post, it makes my brain hurt.
And you could tell.
I literally left the theater of Avengers just feeling like my brain was melting.
You know what? I have so many... I don't like to see 3D movies at all. And even something coming out this weekend like Prometheus that I know was shot in 3D and supposed to be... It's just, I'm physically uncomfortable putting the glasses on I wear glasses over my glasses. It's just, I don't enjoy the movie as much.
It's not, with the animated stuff, it doesn't bother me. Even with Avatar, I really enjoyed it. But, because it wasn't all live action.
It was a lot of CG.
But, you know, like How to Train Your Dragon and those kind of movies, I really enjoy. They didn't bother me as much, but for some reason, it just really hit me.
Doesn't make your eye
A lot
twitch,
of this goes
right?
into the mechanics
the
of how the 3D
action
is done.
Was just like,
when it's done in the computer, they can... physically create the environments with lighting and shading and depth of focus that works specifically for 3D. Yeah. And with animation, it's not like they go film a bunch of stuff and then have to edit together. Every shot has to be created in the computer in 3D so they can match one shot to the next that works perfectly for 3D.
Yeah.
And they can create the depth of field that needs to... In live action, it's basically the cart driving the horse.
Yeah, it didn't work.
No.
Because sometimes the scenes, when it's 3D, everything's supposed to be in focus.
Right.
And I would notice moments where, you know, the foreground was in focus, but the background was all blurry. And I'm like, that's not 3D.
The only two movies I've seen in 3D that I really, really enjoyed was Avatar and Hugo.
I enjoyed Avatar, and
then there's a secondary issue where the 3D glasses.
I mean, that's honestly
make it the image darker.
I mean, honestly, if I had prescription 3D glasses, I'd probably like 3D a lot more. And I should look into this. Now I got to move on to an epidemic that's going on across this continent, people. And the epidemic is people are apparently eating people. People are apparently eating other people. And I'm just going to get right to it. This man, Rudy Eugene, you may have seen him on the news. The cops had to shoot him because he was eating a homeless man's face. They came across him and he was eating the man. The homeless man lived. I mean, he's this guy. I mean, it's horrific. The photos are horrific. I mean, it's just like this. It's like an eye hanging there. I mean, he ate the guy's face. So I'm just going to get right to it. Rudy Eugene You're the fucking enemy of the podcast. Because you can't... Will Sean Podcast will not sit around and just let people go around eating people. You can't eat other people.
To be fair... He was on bath salts.
He was on, like, some crazy drug,
it's
right?
It's a crazy designer drug.
Bath salts. This isn't like you could get a Bed Bath & Beyond.
No, it's just a slang name for it. It's some... I had the ingredients. I left it at work, unfortunately. They're going to find it on the printer. There's a pile of papers and the printer at my office about bath salts and designer drugs, so I got some explaining to do tomorrow. But essentially, this drug, if you ever saw RoboCop 2, Nuke, the drug that RoboCop had to stop, this is what bath salts is.
I don't care. I don't care what he's on. You can't eat people. You shouldn't be taking drugs that are going to make you eat people. This is Rudy Eugene's brother. This guy's a real winner. He said, he came out here and he said, well, that was very uncharacteristic of my brother. That was his quote to the police. This was to eat another man's face. And here's the thing. This isn't the only cannibal story in the past 2 weeks. There was a guy in
the college kid.
Yeah, wait. Is that who ate his roommate's heart?
He killed his roommate. And the story is his brother and father found a tin with like a human head in it or a brain or something. I forget what body part it was, but they found a tin with a body part in it. They left it in his room. They were going to like approach him about what was going on. Then they...
It's not like finding a bag of weed in your kid's room.
Then they went back and it was gone. And it had turned out that he had eaten the heart or the brain or whatever it was.
It was now poop.
And you want to know what that's...
They checked the
toilet.
There
was another one. There was the Canadian gay porn star.
They caught him.
Wait,
but
what?
Gay porn star, and he had like tied someone up and like ate their flesh.
And they've caught him. He was at a cafe reading an article about himself.
This is insane.
There was another dude also in Los Angeles recently. The cops had cornered him, and he was cutting out pieces of his intestines and flicking them at the cops.
And about a year ago, there was this other Canadian guy. This tall Asian Canadian man, and tall Asian Canadian man, that seems odd to begin
with. I work with a 6'3 Filipino. So.
He was on a bus, a Greyhound bus, and he chopped some guy's head off on the bus and then started eating it. So the CDC this week, literally, they released a statement saying that there is no zombie attack. There are no such thing as zombies. There's no epidemic that's turning people into zombies. Like, there is enough fucking people eating other fucking people to actually cause a government agency to declare no zombie. This is a problem. And Rudy Eugene, I'm making you the poster child of this, the enemy of the podcast. Cannibalism, no good.
There was an article on Slate this week on the explainer column. What does human flesh taste like? And the answer is veal.
Why are we even encouraging people?
No, we're not encouraging. We're just...
No, if you say it tastes like veal, you know what? I've had veal. It's not bad.
But to be fair, only children taste like veal.
Oh.
No?
Too soon.
No, no, you gotta get them soon, or else they get too old. They don't taste like veal anymore. They get all stringy. Will Sean Podcast does not condone eating other human beings.
Basically, that's the point we're making on this episode. If you take away three things from this episode, listen to the audiobook of 50 Shades of Grey, don't see Snow White, and don't eat people.
And come to the Fox One prom.
Oh my god. It's just, I mean, it really is the end of days here that we're getting to.
When do we make our murder-suicide pack, and who murders first and who suicides second?
We're going to do it live on the podcast, but then there'll be no one to upload the podcast.
Ah, fuck. Mm.
If we kill ourselves, as the world's ending, can you just upload this episode?
No,
I'll walk you through it. It's a little complicated, but I'll give you the step-by-step.
Just
so
if
episode
you
100.
Type something out for me. I could probably do it.
I'm just going to throw in one more topic before we start to wrap up.
Yep.
It's a sports-related topic, so nobody listening actually cares.
Don't turn off.
But the day this episode comes up on, June 9th, is also the Belmont Stakes. And it is the horse I'll Have Another is going for the Triple Crown.
Woo-hoo.
And you're Kentucky Girl, Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm actually
mint juleps and seersucker suits.
Uh-huh.
We haven't had a Triple Crown winner since Seattle Slew in 1977.
Well, who could forget Seattle Slew?
Well, not in our lifetime. We haven't had one. I'm going to be tuning into this race. I am excited to see if this horse
fail.
Well, no, I think he's going to do it this time.
You wouldn't watch Luck, but you're going to tune in for the Triple Crown?
Well, this is more exciting because I get to see.
Plus, his name is I'll Have Another.
Yeah. Well, and he's got to have one more, at least.
It's like my sex life.
Did you, do you ever go to the track? You ever watched being from Kentucky?
I've been to the Derby a couple times.
Nice. Really?
Yeah, of course. You can't be from Louisville and not go to the Derby.
I'm from LA and go to Rodeo Drive until I was in my 20s.
Well, yeah, you lived a very sheltered life here in the Valley.
It's true, I did.
But no, and I used to go to Belmont a lot. I never went to the Belmont Stakes, but I would go to the...
You go drink in the parking lot with your friends.
Yeah, we'd go. No, we'd go drink while watching the horses race. It's fun. It's a fun,
I wanna
like, activity.
Go, we need to plan a trip. I want to go to Hollywood Park. Not fuck that Hollywood Park. I don't know. Sorry. The one out there in Pasadena.
Arcadia,
yeah. The
There's one in San Diego,
the fancy
too,
pants one.
To.
What's it called?
The
Rose. The fuck. The fancy horse rack.
Well, I'm glad you're making your private plans here on the on the Will Show.
Well, every episode we have to have a little sidebar with being the guest.
Well, now, honestly, I thought it's a lot of fun. The first time I went to track, though, I won the first five races I bet on, so then I got hooked, and I've probably never won since.
That same thing happened to me last time I went to the tracks in San Diego.
Played the trifecta.
I won, like, the first four races, and I got all, like, confident, and then I lost everything.
Like, I'm picking winners no matter what. Well, I say good luck.
I mean, an eye for the horse flesh.
By the time you listen to this podcast, we'll know if I'll have another one.
Santa Anita
not.
Park. That's the one.
That's it.
Thank you, iPhone. Thanks, Siri.
We'll know whether it won, and I hope this horse won. I hope you're listening to this. And it's just, you know what I find fun about the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness and the Bump? It's like, it's quick. It's like 2 minutes tops.
Yeah,
and
fuck
you just...
NASCAR. That's like a 9-hour race. Who needs to drive 500 miles that they can't do in 3 miles? Are you also in NASCAR?
I hate NASCAR. Okay. I hope people don't get pissed off for me saying that, but... It's so pointless. They drive around for hours on the same track.
They drive from, like, L.A. to San Francisco in a circle.
Why? I don't understand
it. It's a left turn.
No, it's an endurance sport.
But why? I just don't get it.
Although next weekend
I
will be watching
horrible.
The Formula One race in Montreal.
I know.
So.
I just don't get it. Driving, I love. I think fast cars are awesome.
Yeah, that's
but
cool.
But just driving around for hours and hours and hours around the same track, I mean, that's so stupid.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And I'll tell you what, the horses are athletes. Those guys in the car are not.
No.
Those are not. I'll get on my Ford
Focus.
Athletes
the way golfers are athletes.
I'll get on the Ford Focus and speed down the 405 at like midnight, and I'll tell you what, that doesn't make me an athlete. Okay, well, this has been a fun episode.
It has been.
I think people learned something, and, you know, from fair warnings, and it's been good stuff. Becca, thank you for coming on.
Thank you guys so much for having
me. I hope you
me.
Had a good time.
I did.
You're now part of the family.
Yay.
So, yeah.
So, one more time, plug away.
Okay. If you'd like to learn more about me, you can go to BeccaBateau.com. That's BeccaBateau.com.
And we'll have a link for that up on the Facebook page, so if you're a good listener, you will have already seen her stuff. And you have a Twitter. Would you like to plug your Twitter?
It's just Becca Bateau, at Becca Bateau.
Boom. Done. Simple. Sean.
Well, as usual, I got my Twitter, TheSeanDavid, and I have my book on Amazon, Triumvirs, Triumvirs, Three Tales, and got a couple extra readers. They've liked what they've read. I've had some discussions with them about it. So buy it, read it. Tell me what you think.
We got to get that audiobook version of it.
Oh, yeah. Got to get the audiobook. We'll talk. Got to read my stories. And then I also have an article I'm working on right now that should be up in about a week. I'll probably talk about it more next week. But on Fritz Lang's classic film Spies or Spione, which I consider to be the original action film and every James Bond, Die Hard, Jason Bourne movie ever made owes their influences to this 1928 silent film. So.
And you'll be able to read that article as well as some articles written by me. I have an article about depressing movies and why we should all watch really depressing movies on u1can.com. You know, can like the city in France, not
well,
like
clearly.
A can. Not like a can you kick. And you can follow me on Twitter at TheRealWillLink. And you can also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti on crntalk.com. This week I yelled about Snow White there's a shocker.
Yeah, exactly. Next week, we have on Shani Rotkovitz from the website rentfoodbroke.com. As I mentioned last week, it's a phenomenal website. Anything under $10 in Los Angeles, events, shows, concerts, comedy, art, whatever. It's your ultimate resource for having a good time and enjoying yourself in the Los Angeles area on a budget. So she's going to be talking about that site, how it got started. And she's sassy, so that'll be fun. And the week after that...
A week after that, you tell me. Daniel...
Daniel Zana. That's right.
We have. I would have mispronounced his last name.
Daniel Zana. He's actually the brother of Eitan Zana, who was on episode...
Seven.
Daniel is actually New York-based. He's a filmmaker. He's an editor. He directed a documentary called The Vinyl Frontier, where if you are into the world of collecting of comic books, he did a documentary about vinyl figurines and the world of these creators, these collectors, and he got a lot of access to people who are considered the gods in this universe. And he'll talk about that and some other projects he's working on.
Yeah, he's going to be in town, so we could have him by the Will Sean Podcast Studios.
And it's going to be we got 2 good weeks. We're booking guests already now for July. We got some big names and some exciting stuff coming through the summer. So
this should be good. So one last time, thank you, Becca.
Thank you, Becca. Guys, so much.
And we're finished.
We're finished. Bye.